It's hard to believe how some people live on this planet. They sleep beside volcanoes, run barefoot across mountains, and dive into oceans so deep it feels like another world. Their lives test every limit of what the human body and spirit can endure. There are the sea nomads who breathe with the waves, the cliff climbers who chase honey through clouds of bees, the firewalkers who carve a living from molten stone, and the sky dwellers who build their homes above the trees. Humans who live on the edge of the impossible and make it home. Far across the turquoise waters of the Coral Triangle, where sky and sea blend into one shimmering expanse, life drifts with the tides. Here dwell the Bajau, the legendary sea nomads of Indonesia and the Philippines. For countless generations, they have lived upon the water itself, crafting wooden boats that serve as home, cradle, and compass. The ocean is their earth, the wind their path, and the stars their only map. In this liquid world, they built a life of motion and harmony, guided not by borders but by the deep pulse of the sea. Their story begins long before modern nations rose along the archipelagos. The Bajau once sailed freely across what is now Indonesia, Malaysia, and the Philippines, moving with the seasons and the migration of fish. They were not wanderers, lost at sea but caretakers of its balance. Fishermen, navigators, and stewards of the coral world below. Their boats, known as lepa-lepa, glided over shallow reefs and deep channels alike, carrying families, tools, and traditions that floated from one horizon to the next. Every plank of wood carried history. Every sail whispered of an ancient bond between human and ocean. Over centuries, their mastery of diving became almost mythic. Bajau divers can descend more than 60 meters beneath the surface, holding their breath for minutes at a time, hunting with spears, or gathering shellfish in a calm, measured dance with the sea. Scientists later discovered that their bodies have adapted to this way of life, their spleens larger than most, their hearts slowing underwater, allowing them to remain submerged far beyond ordinary limits. Each dive is both labor and ritual, a conversation with the deep that has shaped their spirit and identity. Yet the tides of the modern world have begun to reshape their horizon. Marine borders now divide the waters they once roamed freely. Industrial fishing has thinned the schools that once filled their nets, and coral reefs, once radiant gardens of life, fade under human strain. Many Bajau have been urged to settle in stilted villages near coasts, their boats moored in quiet bays instead of open sea. Life on land brings new stability, but also a slow erosion of the freedom that defined them. Still, the ocean remains their constant companion. Each morning, Bajau children leap from docks into the shallows, their laughter echoing across the tide. Elders mend nets by hand, their eyes turned to the same waters that raised them. Even when anchored, they carry the rhythm of the sea within their blood, the rise and fall of waves mirrored in every breath. In their endurance lies a living truth. The Bajau are not relics of a vanishing world, but keepers of its oldest dialogue, the one between humankind and the sea. In every dive and every drifting vessel, they preserve the memory of what it means to belong entirely to the water. The Bajau remain forever between the surface and the deep, the unreal humans who breathe with the tides. High in the mist-veiled Himalayas, where the mountains rise like ancient gods and the wind hums with unseen life, men climb toward the clouds. These are the honey hunters of Nepal. Suspended on rope ladders woven from grass and courage, they ascend sheer cliffs that seem to pierce the sky. Their goal glistens in golden clusters carved into the rock, the hives of the world's largest honeybees. For generations, these fearless climbers have risked their lives to harvest the mountain's wild sweetness, a ritual as sacred as it is perilous. Their story begins in the remote hills of the Gurung people, where the rhythm of life has always followed the mountains. Twice each year, when the great bees build their hives upon the cliffs, the villagers gather to honor an ancient tradition. Before the climb, they offer prayers and burn incense, calling upon forest spirits for protection. It is more than a hunt. It is a ceremony, a living link between man, mountain, and nature's abundance. The honey is believed to hold healing powers, its taste infused with the wild flowers of the Himalayas, and at certain times of the year, with a hallucinogenic potency that ancient shamans once revered. As the ascent begins, each movement is deliberate. The climber's feet find balance against the rock as smoke drifts upward to calm the swarming bees. The hum becomes a storm, a thousand wings vibrating in defiance as men reach into the heart of their fortress. The combs are cut free with long bamboo poles, each stroke guided by instinct and faith. Below, others wait to catch the dripping treasure in woven baskets, their chants echoing through the valleys. It is a breathtaking harmony of danger and devotion, a moment where life hangs by a single rope. But the modern world creeps closer each year, roads carved through forests once sacred and untouched. Younger generations leave for cities where the mountains no longer call. The giant bees themselves, once abundant, now retreat higher into the cliffs as forests vanish and climates shift. What was once a celebration of nature's gift now feels like a battle against time and change. Across the boundless white of Siberia's Yamal Peninsula, where the earth sleeps beneath a shroud of snow and the sun drifts like a pale ghost across the horizon, life continues its ancient migration. Here move the Nenets, the reindeer herders of the Arctic tundra, a people bound to the cold, to endurance, and to the slow rhythm of the reindeer's hooves. Their lives unfold in one of the harshest climates on Earth, where winter dominates and the horizon never ends. Yet within this frozen silence, the Nenets have built a world of movement and survival. For centuries, they have followed the herds across the vast tundra, a journey that spans thousands of kilometers each year. Their camps rise and vanish with the wind, carried on sleds pulled by the very reindeer they tend. Every family moves as one, elders guiding, children learning the paths of migration, and the herds leading them north and south in eternal cycles. Their conical tents, known as chum, stand against blizzards like flickering symbols of life, glowing with warmth in a land ruled by frost. Inside, fires burn with driftwood and reindeer fat, the smell of smoke mixing with the hum of ancient songs. The Nenets' bond with their reindeer runs deeper than mere survival. These animals provide everything: transport, shelter, clothing, and food. Each reindeer is treated with reverence, seen as both companion and spirit guide. The people navigate the tundra by memory and instinct, reading the shifting ice, the migration of birds, and the quiet language of the snow. Their knowledge is not written, but carried in stories, in songs sung beneath the polar lights, in lessons passed from one generation to the next. Yet the tundra they know is changing. The permafrost softens under warming skies, and ancient migration routes flood or fracture. Pipelines carve through ancestral trails, bringing with them roads, machines, and the hum of industry. The Nenets, once free to roam, now find their paths narrowed by fences and extraction sites. The very landscape that has sustained them for centuries grows uncertain beneath their feet. Still, they move onward, adapting as they always have, guided by instinct, driven by resilience. As the winds sweep across the Arctic plains, the Nenets continue their slow pilgrimage between seasons, their silhouettes fading into the white expanse. They are the heartbeat of a frozen world, guardians of endurance in an age of change. Through blizzards, through endless night, through the bite of minus 50 degrees, they remain, riding the edge of survival with quiet dignity. The Nenets reindeer herders are the last great wanderers of the tundra, carrying within them the memory of ice, migration, and the unbroken bond between man and nature. Amid the sweeping silence of the Altai Mountains, where snow drapes the peaks in silver and the wind sings through endless stone, a rider appears against the horizon. An eagle perched upon his arm, its golden feathers glinting in the pale sun. These are the eagle hunters of Mongolia, the Kazakh nomads who have forged a bond between man and bird so profound it feels born from legend. For centuries, they have roamed this frozen expanse where survival depends not only on strength, but on trust between human and wild. Their tradition traces back to the ancient steppes, to an age when empires rose and vanished beneath the hooves of nomadic horsemen. The Kazakhs who settled in Mongolia's far west carried with them an art older than memory, the taming of the golden eagle. Trained from youth, these hunters climb rugged cliffs to capture young eaglets from their nests, raising them by hand in warmth and song. Over years, a silent understanding forms, not of dominance, but of shared instinct. The eagle becomes an extension of the hunter's spirit, seeing through its eyes, striking through its wings. When winter descends upon the Altai, the hunt begins. Draped in fur and leather, the hunter rides through snow-laden valleys, his eagle poised and alert. The air is brittle, each breath visible, each movement deliberate. At a signal, the eagle launches, soaring across the white vastness before plunging upon its prey. Foxes and wolves vanish beneath its talons in a blur of precision and power. For the nomads, this hunt is not sport. It is survival and ritual, a reaffirmation of the harmony between man, beast, and mountain. Yet even here, change rides upon the wind. The number of true eagle hunters dwindles as younger generations move toward towns, drawn by modernity's promise. Tourism brings curious eyes to their world, turning a sacred art into spectacle. Still, in the remote valleys of Bayan Olgi, the tradition endures. Fathers pass eagles to sons and daughters too, now rise as hunters, reviving what might have faded into memory. When the sun dips below the frozen horizon, the hunter releases his eagle to the wild, returning it to the freedom from which it came. It is a gesture of respect, a recognition that no bond, no matter how strong, can possess the wild forever. Deep within the emerald heart of Papua New Guinea's rainforests, where mist clings to the trees and the air hums with life, rise wooden towers that seem to touch the sky. Here live the Korowai people, the last great treehouse builders of the world. Among dense jungle canopies and winding rivers, they have built their homes high above the ground, perched upon towering stilts of bamboo and hardwood. To the Korowai, these treehouses are not merely shelters, but symbols of safety, ingenuity, and survival in one of the most untamed places on Earth. Their world has remained hidden for centuries, veiled by forests so thick that daylight fades beneath the leaves. The Korowai have lived here since long before maps found these lands, dwelling in harmony with a landscape of relentless growth and endless green. Each home they raise begins with ritual and purpose. The trees are chosen carefully, tall, straight, unyielding, and with hand-cut tools, they are shaped into towering structures reaching 30 meters above the earth. From below, the sight is astonishing, a fragile marvel of bamboo lashed together by vines, swaying gently in the jungle breeze. But the reason for their elevation runs deeper than wonder. For generations, the Korowai built high to escape the dangers that prowl the forest floor. Rising floods, biting insects, and once, the threat of rival clans. From the heights, they could see both safety and the sweep of their domain. The air above the canopy offered not only protection, but perspective, a sacred distance between themselves and the shifting world below. These treehouses became living extensions of the forest itself, grown from its strength, yet lifted beyond its grasp. Each structure is a feat of pure human will. Men climb the trees barefoot, balancing along slender poles, carrying every beam and vine by hand. Women and children weave bamboo floors and walls with quiet precision, transforming raw forest into home. At night, fires flicker through the floor slats, their light casting patterns across the leaves below. The sounds of insects rise, blending with the whispers of wind and distant thunder. It is a life suspended between earth and sky, both precarious and eternal. Yet the jungle that cradles them is changing. Outsiders bring roads, machines, and the hum of modern life into lands once ruled by silence. Some Korowai families have begun moving toward nearby towns, their tree houses abandoned to the vines. But others remain deep within the forest, keeping alive the ancient rhythm of building, climbing, and dwelling among the clouds. At the edge of dawn on the island of Java, the world glows an eerie blue. Deep within the Kawa Ijen volcano, men descend into the heart of fire. These are the sulfur miners of Indonesia, laboring inside one of Earth's most dangerous places. Beneath their feet, molten rock breathes and boils, and the air thickens with clouds of sulfuric gas. Yet each day they walk willingly into this otherworldly inferno, carving a living from the raw bones of the planet. Theirs is a landscape of both beauty and torment, where survival burns brighter than fear. The story of these miners begins in the highlands of East Java, where the Ijen crater conceals a lake of acid the color of turquoise glass. Around it rise vents that exhale toxic smoke, the breath of an active volcano that has shaped both land and life for millennia. As dawn breaks, the blue flames appear, sulfur igniting in the darkness, a sight so mesmerizing it feels unearthly. When the fires subside, miners move through the haze with only wet cloths pressed to their faces. With hand-forged iron bars, they chip hardened sulfur from the rocks, their silhouettes swallowed by steam. Each block they carry tells a story of endurance. The loads often weigh more than their own bodies, yet they shoulder them up the crater's rim, climbing steep paths through choking gas and volcanic dust. The air burns their lungs, their eyes sting from acid, and their skin bears the mark of years spent inside the mountain. The journey down to the collection point is long and silent, each step measured, each breath a battle. And still, they return the next day, drawn by necessity, guided by the hope of another sunrise. The sulfur they harvest fuels industries far from this world of smoke, used in medicines, fertilizers, and cosmetics. Yet the men who gather it remain unseen, their labor forgotten beneath layers of modern comfort. For them, the volcano is both enemy and provider, both destroyer and god. It demands everything and gives only enough to survive. Still, within this harsh ritual lies something timeless. The miners of Ijen embody the raw strength of the human spirit, the will to carve meaning from pain, to walk through poison and fire in pursuit of life. When night falls again and the crater burns with ghostly light, their figures move like shadows of myth, humans shaped by Earth's fury, forever bound to the mountain's breath. Along the sandstone cliffs of Bandiagara in Mali, where the desert meets the wind and the stars seem close enough to touch, life clings to the rock itself. Here live the Dogon, an ancient people whose homes rise from the cliff faces like extensions of the earth, carved by hand and shaped by time. Their villages appear suspended between heaven and ground, a labyrinth of stone dwellings, shrines, and granaries built high upon the escarpment. The cliffs have sheltered the Dogon for centuries, a sanctuary of both spiritual and earthly endurance. Their story stretches deep into history, carried through generations by song and symbol. Long ago, the Dogon fled to these cliffs to escape invaders, seeking refuge among the towering walls of sandstone. Here, they found protection not only in height, but in solitude. Over time, the cliffs became sacred, a meeting place between human and divine. Their architecture reflects this reverence. houses clustered like constellations, doorways aligned with the rising sun, and sacred altars watching over the valleys below. Each structure breathes purpose, built with stone and mud but guided by cosmic meaning. The Dogon world is a harmony of earth and sky. For centuries, their stories have spoken of stars unseen by the naked eye, knowledge that has mystified scholars and inspired legend. They tell of Sirius, the brightest star in the night sky, and of an invisible companion star that circles it. A truth only confirmed by modern science in recent centuries. To the Dogon, this was never discovery but inheritance, passed through sacred teachings that weave the cosmos into their creation myth. The stars are not distant, they are the map of existence itself. Life upon the cliffs is woven with ritual and rhythm. Each year, the Dogon celebrate the Sigui ceremony, a vast cycle of renewal that spans generations. Dancers wearing towering masks move through the villages, their movements echoing the journey of ancestors and spirits through time. Every gesture, every song, speaks to a cosmology that binds human life to the pulse of the universe. High in the canyons of northern Mexico, where crimson cliffs twist through endless wilderness, a people run, not for sport or glory, but for life itself. They are the Tarahumara, or Rarámuri, known to the world as the Running People. Across the rugged Sierra Madre, they move with astonishing endurance, covering vast distances barefoot or in thin sandals made of leather and tire rubber. Their feet strike the earth with rhythm and purpose, echoing the heartbeat of their ancestors. To the Tarahumara, running is not an act of endurance, it is an act of existence. Their story unfolds across the Copper Canyon, a labyrinth of deep ravines and sunlit plateaus, carved by rivers over millions of years. For centuries, the Tarahumara have lived here in isolation, their villages scattered among the high ridges and hidden valleys. The land itself is both beautiful and brutal, its steep trails and scorching heat demanding strength, patience, and balance. Over generations, the Tarahumara became one with this terrain, mastering the art of persistence running, a tradition born not from competition, but from necessity. They ran to hunt, to trade, to communicate, and to survive in a world shaped by distance. Their runs are stories told through motion. A hunt could last for days. The runner pursuing deer until exhaustion brought animal and human together in a silent meeting of endurance. Ritual races called Rarajipari turn the landscape into an arena of tradition, men and women chasing wooden balls across mountains for dozens of miles, guided only by instinct and the rising sun. Each step becomes a prayer, each breath a connection to the spirits of the earth. But their strength is not born of muscle alone. The Tarahumara diet, rich in corn, beans, and chia, and their simple way of life, sustain a balance that modern athletes strive to imitate. Their culture values humility, community, and the harmony between body and land. Running is woven into their identity, as natural as breathing, as ancient as the canyons themselves. In recent decades, the outside world has discovered the Tarahumara's extraordinary endurance, drawing runners and researchers alike to study their secrets. Yet, for the Tarahumara, the race was never about winning. It was about belonging. As paved roads and modern pressures inch closer to their mountain homes, they continue to run, carrying with them the rhythm of generations past. Far from the lowland swamps, life on Lake Titicaca floats upon the water itself, where the Uru people have built entire islands from reeds, turning a fragile plant into home, boat, and sanctuary. Across the mirror-like surface of the lake, golden mats of totora reeds rise and fall with the wind, their edges melting into the blue of the Andean sky. This is the world of the Uru, a people who have mastered the art of floating between earth and sky, building a civilization that rests not on land, but on the living heart of water. Their origins stretch back thousands of years, long before the rise of the Inca Empire. The Uru sought refuge upon the lake to escape conflict on the mainland, creating a world of freedom and peace upon the open water. Using only the reeds that grow along the lake's edges, they crafted everything they needed: houses, boats, watchtowers, even the very islands beneath their feet. Layer upon layer of totara was bound together and anchored to the lake bed with ropes and stakes. As the reeds beneath decayed, new layers were added above, a continuous act of renewal that mirrored their enduring spirit. Each island sways gently with the rhythm of the waves, a living platform that must be constantly rebuilt to stay afloat. Families work together to maintain the delicate balance, cutting fresh reeds, weaving walls, and shaping the curved reed boats known as balsas. The scent of wet reeds fills the air, mingling with the crisp mountain wind and the distant calls of Andean birds. Life here is both fragile and eternal, suspended between water and sky. For the Uru, the reeds are more than material, they are identity. The plant feeds, shelters, and sustains them, forming a bond as sacred as the lake itself. Even the ancestors are believed to rest beneath the water, their spirits drifting through the roots of the totara. The lake is their past and future, their home and protector. But the modern world presses at the shores. Tourism brings money and attention, but also change, reshaping traditions once untouched by time. The Uru now live between two realities, one anchored in the old ways, the other drawn toward the mainland. Yet their islands still rise anew, rebuilt each month by hands that refuse to forget the ancient rhythm of water and reed. As the sun sets over Lake Titicaca, the floating islands glow, gold against the fading light, drifting softly beneath the Andean peaks. Here, the Uru continue to live in motion, keepers of a world that floats, survives, and renews itself endlessly upon the water's skin. High above the plains of Thessaly, where stone pillars rise like the fingers of the earth reaching toward heaven, stand the monasteries of Meteora, home to the cliff monks of Greece. Perched atop towering rock spires, these sanctuaries seem suspended between sky and stone, their walls bathed in light and silence. It is a landscape shaped by both nature's power and human devotion, where monks once sought the solitude of height to draw nearer to the divine. In Meteora, faith is not spoken loudly. It echoes through the wind and the whisper of prayer carried across the chasms below. Centuries ago, when the Byzantine Empire was waning and the lands below were torn by war and invasion, hermits began to climb these impossible cliffs in search of peace. The rocks, sculpted by time and weather, offered both refuge and revelation. With only ropes, wooden ladders, and pure resolve, they scaled walls that soared hundreds of meters into the air. Upon these summits, they built wooden shelters, and later, monasteries of stone, places where silence could speak and contemplation could endure beyond the reach of the world. By the 15th century, Meteora had become a true monastic citadel. More than 20 monasteries crowned the cliffs, each a fortress of faith clinging to the rock. Supplies were once lifted by hand-woven nets hoisted with ropes, swaying high above the abyss. It was said that the ropes were replaced only when the Lord let them break, a phrase that captured the monks' unwavering trust in the divine. Here, amid clouds and endless sky, life was reduced to its essence: prayer, labor, and solitude. The rhythm of bells marked the hours. The echo of chants filled the stone chambers, blending with the cries of distant hawks. Time, however, has worn away much of what once stood. Only a few of the monasteries remain active, their communities smaller but no less devoted. Modern bridges and steps now offer safer passage, yet the spirit of isolation endures. pilgrims still climb to these heights, drawn by the same hunger for peace that first brought the monks centuries ago. As dusk descends upon Meteora, the sandstone pillars glow with hues of amber and violet. From the heights, the monks gaze across the valley below, the world hushed beneath them. Between earth and eternity, the monasteries still stand, symbols of faith carved into stone and a testament to the human desire to rise above the world in search of the eternal. In the scorched lands of northern Namibia, where the sun paints the earth in shades of rust and gold, live the Himba people, a desert tribe whose very skin glows with the color of the land itself. Here, in the vast expanse of the Kunene region, the wind carries dust instead of rain, and survival is written into every heartbeat. Yet amid this arid wilderness, the Himba have created a world of grace and endurance, their crimson beauty a living reflection of both environment and spirit. Their home lies within one of the driest places on the African continent, where water is precious and life clings to the rhythm of drought and dawn. Generations ago, the Himba's ancestors migrated across the deserts, herding cattle and seeking pastures among the thorny shrubs and dry riverbeds. Over centuries, they shaped a way of life perfectly attuned to the land's harsh breath, moving with the seasons, following the rains that rarely come. In this landscape of scarcity, adaptation became art. Each morning, the women of the Himba anoint their skin and hair with ojize, a sacred mixture of red ochre, butterfat, and aromatic herbs. This crimson clay protects them from the sun, repels insects, and softens their skin in the desert air. But beyond its practicality, ojize carries meaning far deeper. It is identity, memory, and beauty combined, a connection to the earth and to their ancestors. Under the blazing light, their bodies gleam like copper, each movement reflecting strength and heritage. The same clay adorns their braided hair, sculpted into intricate designs that speak of age, status, and lineage. The Himba's villages rise from the dust in circular patterns, built from mud and wood, centered around the sacred Okuruwo, the ancestral fire that never dies. It symbolizes the link between the living and those who came before, burning as quietly as the heart of their culture. Around it, daily life unfolds in rhythms shaped by the sun and the cattle, by prayer and silence. Every gesture, from the tending of herds to the crafting of ornaments, holds purpose and meaning born of resilience. On the island of Tana in Vanuatu, where the earth trembles and the night sky burns from within, the people of Mount Yasur live in the shadow of one of the world's most active volcanoes. Here, fire is not feared but revered. The land hums with ancient energy, and the air carries both the scent of ash and the sound of life unfolding at the edge of creation. This is a place where humans and the earth's molten heart exist in fragile harmony, and where every eruption is both a warning and a blessing. For generations, the volcano villagers have called this trembling landscape home. Their ancestors settled at the foot of Mount Yasur centuries ago, long before maps or modern nations defined their world. They came to see the volcano not as a destroyer, but as a living spirit, a presence that demands respect and gratitude. Each roar from the mountain, each spark that lights up the darkened clouds is treated as the voice of the ancestral gods. To live here is to listen. The soil around the volcano is dark and fertile, feeding the taro and yams that sustain the villagers. Yet, beneath every step lies the pulse of magma, a constant reminder of both life and fragility. Before venturing near the crater, rituals are performed, chants rise with the smoke, and offerings of kava and leaves are placed upon the ground. The people ask permission, not protection, acknowledging that they are guests in a realm where the planet breathes fire. At night, the volcano glows like a living heart, its eruptions painting the sky with bursts of crimson and gold. From a distance, it feels almost celestial, an eternal lantern lighting the island's soul. But up close, it is raw and violent, sending rivers of ash across the valleys and shaking homes built from bamboo and palm. And still, the people stay. They rebuild, they replant, and they watch the fire as one would watch the sea, unpredictable, yet full of meaning. Through storms and eruptions, the villagers have carried their traditions like torches through time. The dances, the chants, the gatherings around sacred stones, they are not remnants of the past, but living expressions of survival. In their stories, Mount Yasur is not a threat, but an ancestor, one that gives life even as it tests endurance. High in the heart of the Swiss Alps, where the mountains carve through the clouds and silence drifts like falling snow, live the Walser people, descendants of settlers who mastered survival in one of Europe's most unforgiving landscapes. Their wooden homes cling to steep slopes as if grown from the rock itself, weathered yet steadfast, standing as monuments to endurance. Here, amid glaciers and storms, life has always been a test of balance, between isolation and belonging, between human wilt and the immensity of the alpine world. The Walser trace their origins to the Upper Rhone Valley, where they began their long migration nearly 1,000 years ago. Seeking land and freedom, they climbed into remote valleys that others feared to enter. From Switzerland to Austria and northern Italy, they carved out villages on impossible ground, building terraces for cattle, clearing snowbound fields, and shaping lives from stone and timber. Theirs was a quiet conquest of endurance, guided by faith, discipline, and a reverence for the mountains that both protected and imprisoned them. Each Walser village carries the mark of a people who turned adversity into art. Their homes are built of darkened larch wood, fitted with precision, designed to breathe through winters that can bury the world in white. Roofs sag gently under the weight of snow, walls lean against wind and time, yet generations still find warmth within them. The architecture reflects not luxury, but wisdom, crafted from what the land allows and preserved by the hands of those who understand it best. Through centuries of isolation, the Walser people forged a culture defined by independence and resilience. They became skilled herders, builders, and traders, carrying their language and customs across mountain passes that often vanished beneath avalanches. The rhythm of their lives followed the seasons, summers spent high in alpine pastures, winters in wooded hamlets where stories were told by the firelight. Theirs was a world measured not by wealth or conquest, but by survival and community. Even today, as the world below hums with modern speed, the high valleys of the Walser remain worlds apart. Some villages still rest beyond the reach of roads, accessible only by winding trails or cable lifts that glide over centuries of snow. The people who remain there continue to live by the old rhythms, tending their herds, restoring their homes, and honoring a legacy that refuses to fade. Far beyond the reach of ordinary roads, where the Aegean Sea meets mist-shrouded cliffs, lies a peninsula that seems untouched by time. Mount Athos, the holy mountain of Greece. Here, for more than 1,000 years, monks have lived in silence and devotion, far from the noise of the modern world. No women are allowed to enter, no cities have taken root, and no electricity hums through its stone walls. It is a world of candlelight and prayer, where time moves not by the clock, but by the rhythm of chants and bells echoing through the dawn. Mount Athos is a living monastery, an entire land consecrated to contemplation. Its slopes are cloaked in forests of cypress and olive, and scattered across the cliffs are 20 monasteries, some carved into rock, others rising like fortresses above the sea. Each one was built by different Orthodox traditions, Greek, Russian, Serbian, Bulgarian, yet all are bound by the same vow of humility and separation. To live here is to walk between heaven and earth, where each breath is a form of worship. The monks of Athos live as their forebears did centuries ago. Their days begin before sunrise, when the deep sound of the semantron, a wooden beam struck with rhythm, calls them to prayer. In the dim light of oil lamps, they gather in chapels, filled with the scent of incense and the glow of icons painted long before their time. Hours are spent chanting ancient hymns, reading scripture, and working the land. Their food is simple: bread, olives, fruit, and what the soil provides. They ask for little, needing only enough to sustain both body and soul. There are no cars, no paved roads, only narrow paths winding through dense woods and steep ravines. Supplies arrive by boat, as they have for centuries, delivered by those permitted to cross the waters that separate the holy mountain from the rest of the world. Visitors who do arrive come not as tourists, but as pilgrims, men seeking peace, guidance, or the quiet echo of faith in its purest form. In this solitude, the monks find what the world has lost. The silence is not emptiness, but presence, the stillness of thought, the breath of eternity. Storms roll in from the Aegean, waves crash against the cliffs, yet the chants within the monasteries continue unbroken. Across the boundless expanse of the Sahara, where the dunes roll like waves of gold beneath a burning sun, move the Tuareg, known as the Blue Men of the Desert. Their indigo robes shimmer against the sand, stained with the dye that marks both identity and endurance. For centuries, they have crossed this ocean of dust and silence, guided only by the stars and the whisper of the wind. In this vast and merciless landscape, they are the living pulse of an ancient world that refuses to fade. The Tuareg are descendants of Berber tribes who once ruled the great caravan routes that stitched Africa together. From the oases of Mali to the high plateaus of Algeria and Niger, they carried salt, gold, and stories across horizons where few dare to travel. The desert was their kingdom, and the camel, graceful, patient, unyielding, was their vessel. Generations learned to read the Sahara as others read the sea, the shape of dunes revealing direction, the stars revealing destiny. Their blue garments are more than clothing. They are protection and pride. Dyed with rich indigo that rubs onto their skin, it colors their faces with the hue of twilight, giving rise to their legendary name. The cloth shields them from the sandstorms and the searing heat, but it also carries spiritual weight. The Tuareg believe the color blue reflects the sky, connecting them to the infinite. Even in the harshest winds, their robes ripple like fragments of night carried across the day. In their world, silence speaks louder than words. Villages of tents rise from the emptiness like mirages, woven from goat hair and anchored by memory. Every object, every gesture carries meaning. The silver jewelry etched with symbols of protection, the veiled faces of the men, the songs that speak of love, loss, and the desert's eternal rhythm. Through it all, they maintain a deep code of honor called Ashak, a moral compass built on dignity, respect, and generosity toward all travelers who cross their path. High above the clouds, where the world narrows to wind, ice, and stone, live the yak herders of the Himalayas, families who dwell in a realm so elevated that even the air feels thin with reverence. Between the frozen valleys of Tibet and the high plateaus of Nepal, they move with their herds across landscapes that seem carved from silence. Here, life unfolds at over 4,000 meters, where every breath is an act of endurance, and every sunrise a quiet triumph against the cold. For centuries, these herders have shaped their existence around the yak, a creature as rugged and enduring as the land itself. Thick-furred and patient, the yak is both companion and lifeline, providing milk, meat, wool, and warmth. Its strength carries goods across mountain passes that have no roads. Its hide forms the tents that guard against blizzards, and its dung fuels the fires that flicker in stone huts when the world outside freezes solid. To the herders, the yak is sacred, not as a symbol, but as life itself woven into their every ritual and breath. Their villages perch on windswept slopes, built from rough stone and earth, small sanctuaries against the roaring elements. In these remote outposts, time feels suspended, marked not by hours, but by the turning of seasons and the slow rhythm of migration. When the snows melt and valleys bloom with grass, families lead their herds to higher pastures. When winter descends again, they retreat toward sheltered valleys where frost etches the prayer flags and ice glitters like glass upon the trails. The people speak softly, their faces weathered by the sun and wind, their eyes reflecting the clarity of the mountains. They have learned to read the clouds and the cry of the wind, to sense storms before they form. Their faith, rooted in Tibetan Buddhism, infuses the landscape with quiet divinity. Stones are stacked into chortens, prayer flags flutter at every pass, and the sound of spinning wheels merges with the whisper of snow. In this world of thin air and deep stillness, survival itself becomes a form of devotion. Along the quiet bends of the Mekong River in Laos, where mist drifts over the water and mountains sleep beneath clouds, a humble miracle is rebuilt each year, the bamboo bridges. Here, in the village paths that link lives across the current, people craft passageways from nothing but patience, strength, and living grass. When the monsoon rains swell the river and sweep the bridges away, they do not mourn. Instead, when the waters calm, they gather once more to rebuild, binding the land together with the rhythm of renewal. For generations, these bamboo bridge builders have lived beside the Mekong, shaping their world from one of nature's simplest gifts. Bamboo, light, strong, and endlessly giving, is their material, their craft, and their heritage. Each stalk is cut, dried, and woven by hand, tied with vines and rope into spans that stretch across the muddy water. There are no machines, no blueprints, only memory and skill passed quietly from elder to youth. The bridge rises piece by piece, the sound of bamboo striking stone echoing like a heartbeat across the valley. Every year, the cycle repeats. When the rains come, the river swells and the bridge disappears beneath the flood, carried away as if swallowed by the earth. But when the dry season returns, the villagers gather again, their hands shaping the same structure from the same materials. It is a ritual of resilience, a living symbol of impermanence. Nothing here is meant to last forever, and yet everything returns. In this endless act of rebuilding, they mirror the rhythm of nature itself. The bridge is more than a path, it is a lifeline. It connects fields to markets, families to temples, and stories to the flow of time. At dawn, monks in saffron robes cross its creaking boards, their reflections trembling on the river's surface. Children run across, laughing, carrying baskets of fruit or school books. And when the sun sets, the bridge glows in the fading light, its surface gleaming gold as the villagers walk home beneath the soft hum of cicadas. In the blazing heart of Ethiopia's Danakil Depression, one of the hottest, most inhospitable places on earth, life endures in defiance of reason. Here, in a landscape of burning salt and shimmering mirage, the salt miners carve their living from the earth's glowing crust under the unrelenting sun where temperatures soar above 50 degrees and no shadow offers mercy. They walk across plains that glisten white as bone. What seems lifeless to the eye is, for them, a world of work, tradition, and astonishing resilience. For centuries, the Afar people have come to this desolate basin to harvest salt, as their ancestors did long before the modern world began to measure hardship. The Danakil, sunken below sea level and scorched by volcanic heat, is a realm where earth and fire seem fused. Here, salt is not a byproduct. It is the landscape itself, stretching to the horizon like a frozen ocean. The miners rise before dawn, traveling in long caravans of camels that carry their tools, and later, the glimmering slabs of salt that will become their livelihood. The process has changed little over time. With wooden axes and iron picks, men strike the crust, breaking it into neat rectangles, each slab lifted and stacked by hand. Their movements are slow and deliberate, not from hesitation, but from the sheer weight of the heat pressing down. Around them, the air ripples with mirage. The horizon blurs into a sea of white and gold. Sweat dries instantly. Every breath feels borrowed from the earth itself, yet in this tormenting silence, the rhythm of work continues, a harmony between endurance and purpose. When the day's labor ends, the camels are loaded with salt, forming long lines that wind across the plains like silent processions. These caravans travel for days to reach markets in the highlands, where the salt, once traded ounce for ounce with gold, remains a vital part of daily life. The trade sustains entire families, linking this hostile desert to the distant green valleys beyond. High in the Andean highlands of Bolivia, where the sky meets the earth in a vast sweep of blue and stone, live the Aymara people, descendants of one of the world's oldest mountain civilizations. At over 4,000 meters above sea level, they have carved out life in an environment that defies human endurance. The air is thin, the winds are sharp, and the nights freeze without warning. Yet amid this austere beauty, the Aymara endure, their lives shaped by mountains older than memory, and a culture as resilient as the land itself. Long before the rise of the Inca, the ancestors of the Aymara built their homes around the shores of Lake Titicaca, where the earth meets water and sky in perfect symmetry. They learned to listen to the rhythm of the seasons, to coax life from the frozen ground, and to build a harmony with nature that has lasted for thousands of years. Their knowledge of high-altitude farming remains unmatched. By sculpting terraces into the mountainsides and creating ingenious irrigation systems, they transformed the barren slopes into fields of potatoes, quinoa, and maize, foods that became the foundation of Andean civilization. In the Aymara world, everything is connected through Aini, the sacred principle of reciprocity. To plant, to harvest, to build. Each act is done in cooperation with family, neighbors, and the earth itself. When they work the land, they speak to Pachamama, the Mother Earth, offering coca leaves and prayers in gratitude. It is not mere ritual, but relationship, a dialogue between human effort and divine balance. Through this bond, they have preserved both their crops and their spirit in the face of harshness few could endure. Their villages, built of stone and adobe, rest beneath skies so clear that the stars seem close enough to touch. Smoke curls from clay ovens and colorful textiles ripple in the mountain wind, each woven thread a story of lineage, faith, and endurance. The people move deliberately, conserving energy in the thin air, their faces burnished by the sun that burns but rarely warms. Generations have passed this way of life from parent to child, each teaching not only survival, but respect for the land, the ancestors, and the fragile balance of existence. High within the Atlas Mountains of Morocco, where clouds drift low across red cliffs and green valleys, live the Berber mountain farmers, descendants of one of North Africa's oldest civilizations. Their villages cling to the slopes like mosaics of clay and stone, overlooking fields carved into the mountains themselves. In a land of sharp winds, scarce rain, and endless rock, the Berbers have learned to coax life from the earth with a patience as ancient as the peaks that surround them. Their presence here reaches back thousands of years, long before the rise of cities along the coasts or the march of empires across the desert. The Berbers, or Imazighen, free people, have always found strength in the mountains. Over generations, they built terraces into the steep hillsides, transforming the rugged terrain into layers of cultivated life. Barley, wheat, olives, and almonds grow in fragile harmony, fed by hand-dug irrigation channels that catch the rare mountain rains. These terraces are not merely farms. They are living monuments to endurance, crafted stone by stone, season by season. Each morning before the sun crests the peaks, herders lead their goats and sheep along narrow trails that wind between cliffs and ravines. The sound of bells echoes through the valleys as the flocks move toward higher pastures. Women tend to gardens beside mud brick homes, weaving rugs and grinding grain, while the scent of olive oil and cedar smoke fills the air. Life here is measured not by time, but by cycles, the rhythm of planting, harvest, and the long quiet of winter snows. The Berber farmers are keepers of an ancient knowledge, passed down through generations without written word. They read the clouds to predict rain, the color of the soil to judge its health, and the song of the wind to sense change. Their connection to the land is both practical and sacred, woven with stories of ancestors and mountain spirits. Festivals mark the seasons, blending old beliefs with traces of Islam, their songs rising like prayer into the cold air. Though the modern world has crept closer, with roads cutting through once isolated valleys, many Berber communities continue to live as they always have, self-sustained, humble, and proud. Their architecture, built from earth and timber, blends seamlessly into the mountains as if grown from the land itself. Even their language, Tamazight, carries the rhythm of stone and wind, a voice as enduring as the peaks around them. When dusk falls, the mountains turn to shadow and gold. Smoke rises from hearths, and the last herds return across the terraces. The air cools, and the valley hums with silence. In that stillness, the Berber farmers remain, guardians of soil and tradition, shaping existence from the most unforgiving terrain. Their lives are carved into the very bones of the Atlas, their endurance as steady as the mountains they call home. High in the mist-wrapped mountains of northern Vietnam, where the earth folds into endless green terraces, live the hill tribes, the Hmong and Dao people, guardians of a landscape carved by hand and heart. Their villages perch on slopes so steep they seem to float above the clouds, surrounded by rice fields that ripple like liquid gold in the sun and mirror the sky during the rains. Here, life unfolds to the rhythm of wind, water, and tradition, a harmony between people and the mountain that has endured for centuries. The Hmong and Dao arrived in these highlands long ago, migrating from the great heartlands of Asia. Seeking freedom from empires and wars, they climbed into the clouds and made the wilderness their refuge. Over generations, they shaped the mountains themselves, cutting terraces into impossible inclines, turning wild ridges into fields that feed entire communities. Each step of rice, bordered by bamboo and stone, is both a work of art and an act of defiance against gravity. Their homes, built from timber and thatch, rise gently among the fog. Inside, fires burn on clay hearths, their smoke drifting through cracks in the roof. Around these fires, the people weave, hands moving with ancestral memory, turning hemp and indigo-dyed fabric into clothes that carry their identity. The Hmong's dark blue garments shimmer with hand-embroidered symbols of the sky and earth, while the Dao women wear red headdresses adorned with silver beads that catch the light like mountain dew. Every thread, every piece of jewelry is a living archive of belief, protection, and beauty. The mountains have always tested those who call them home. In the dry season, the terraces thirst under a relentless sun. In the rains, they transform into glimmering stairways of mud and water. Yet through every hardship, the people endure, guided by rituals that honor the spirits of the land. Ceremonies call for good harvests, heal the sick, and welcome the new year, echoing through valleys with drums and flutes that seem to speak to the clouds themselves.